Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening. You are listening to Love Sport Radio, and there'll be a saying in certain Premier League parts, and that saying, gents, be along come Norwich. Now, bear with me. There is a link coming up. I have to say, there is a link coming up.
I can't wait.
Well, the saying, of course, is attributed to records that need to be broken or started or ending or wherever it may be. That's what the saying is attributed to. So, along come Norwich to lend a helping hand, or on occasions, an unhelpful hand. Dare I say it, chaps? Dare I say that along come Chelsea? I don't know. If you look at West Ham, if you look at Everton, if you look at Bournemouth.
I know. We seem to be the run enders, don't we, at the moment?
Yeah.
It's really, really bizarre. But, I mean, I don't know about you. I'm sure, actually, if you went and looked back statistically, this would be a load of bunkum. But I always get the feeling, it's a bit like whenever we play a team that's got a new manager, I always think we're going to lose. I mean, obviously that happened against Everton. It's the same with, you know, teams that have been on an appalling run.
Bad runs,
and I always feel this has been going on for years at Chelsea. But, I mean, in a weird old sense, we're kind of back. Many people would think after the recent events we've gone back to the 70s or the 80s in life. But I think Chelsea, in a sense, have gone back to the kind of the 90s, where we would like beat the best teams in the league but lose to the worst. And that's what we've always done. It's a Chelsea thing.
Yeah,
it's history and tradition, actually. Yeah, mate. You should respect it, mate.
Hey, listen, I'm respecting it. I'm respecting it like no other, of course. On this, I should say, speaking of chatting bunkum, the Chelsea fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beardall, with Stanford Chidge, of course, and Dan Silver.
Kiddo, kiddo.
No, kiddo tonight. He's singing in the carols or something. Is he singing?
It's some sort of singing.
I don't know.
Singing for his supper.
Off with his daughter or something. Yeah. Bless him.
That does not surprise me.
He'll probably be listening. He's probably in the middle of a church somewhere with his phone dialed into
he'll be on the stage taking over.
He will. He'll probably phone in a minute. I've just come out for this quick break from the carol thing. I thought I'd give you all a ring.
You know.
Well, if you want to ring, anybody else would like to ring 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Now, gents, we are nearly a week on, of course, from that defeat to Bournemouth. And we're not going to dwell on it too much, but that is 4 defeats in 5 now. To be fair, not outplayed by Bournemouth's side. Only 2 shots on target, I think, for Bournemouth. And when we talk about runs ending or starting, Bournemouth, to be fair, not the worst record at Stamford Bridge in Premier League history.
Bit of a bogey side, I think. They're becoming that way.
3 wins out of the last 4. They've got the hoodoo over us.
We were talking earlier on, weren't we, about our dear buddy, Paul Mortimer, who I do a show with on a Sunday morning. He's, poor long-suffering Paul Mortimer, I should probably say. But I've had a chat with him about this over the last few weeks, actually. And, I mean, you know, I respect Paul as a former, you know, Premier League player. And he was wondering this a few weeks ago. He said, mate, I think you might get found out at home. You know, a lot of these sides are going to, you know, pack the defence, 10 men behind the ball, stop the supply from midfield, frustrate you. And I fear he may have got that absolutely on the money, because that performance against Bournemouth, Dan, was redolent of a lot of what we've seen, not just in the recent past, but longer than that. You know, funnily enough, because we've got Spurs coming up this week, and of course that 0-0 against Spurs years ago when Mourinho... you know, it's been a long-standing feature that, faced with that, without a player like Hazard, for example, who could do something wonderful and magical, Chelsea seemed to struggle to be able to break teams down and find a way. And they struggled to find a way against Bournemouth, although they hadn't, again, they had enough chances.
I mean, that's the biggest issue. I mean, we're quite predictable to play against, quite, you know, in recent years, really, since probably, you know, the Carlo double side was, if we can't score an early goal, we get frustrated and passes go astray. And every time we play, a goalkeeper turns into Gordon Banks, don't they?
They always become
like incredible goal. I mean, David Martin, West Ham, I know it's going back a bit, he hadn't played in the Premier League, makes his debut. We don't test him.
No. Well, that's you know, I need to kind of talk to the people who really know their onions tactically. You know, I don't even have my FIFA 19 badges, let alone UEFA badges. But I'm not an idiot. I've seen a lot of football. And what I would say is I don't think we work the keeper enough. I think we create a lot, but we don't make the keeper work.
we don't shoot enough. I mean, we just do not shoot. The amount of times we get a position where we should shoot and there's one more pass, and like Pulisic is guilty of that quite often. He'll go in, he'll do one more shimmy or put it back on his left foot, and then the chance is gone.
Try and walk it into the net,
yeah,
a bit.
Yeah, have a shot. It's like the Arsenal. Our people, you know, Arsenal criticism was they always try to pass it and get the perfect goal. Have a shot.
I don't know why they do that, though. I can't understand that.
It's weird. Have a shot.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Everyone's trying to be Barcelona of 10 years ago. You know, pass. Goal.
But this is what I mean. Yeah. I would love to talk to some you know, ex-pros who really know the game and try and understand why that happens, because it's become a real feature of this season. I mean, there are two things really, aren't there, Matt? It's not just up front where we're just not clinical enough. It's at the back where we make mistakes. And I remember earlier on in the season, we were all moaning on this particular programme about zonal marking. Remember that? You know, it's not they don't seem to have a problem there anymore, but they just concentration.
Soft goals. I mean, it was
make mistakes.
Yeah, the Bournemouth goal was soft. You know, everyone stops.
It was just a slight lapse in concentration, yeah. I think, wasn't it?
And then the flag goes up, and you're because you're brought up that way, you
play
stop.
To the whistle, Dad.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, this whole generation of players have brought to the point where the flag goes up. Mentally, you just stop because you think it's going to be offside. Now the whole VAR thing, it may be another generation of players before we actually they'll carry on playing to the whistle.
Because clever goal though.
Oh yeah, clever. I mean, you know, it took it very well, good finish. But you're like, I was offside, great. And then it's VAR. Oh, great, okay, it's going to be a goal. And you can tell within about 15 seconds it's going to be a goal here because it's like, oh. It's not clear and obvious.
I don't know why it took so long. By the way, it should have just been like that.
First replay was that, oh, he's onside.
Yeah, and listen, that's an issue for another time. We're not going to rant about VAR right now. But I would like to know, gents, if in the stadium. Now, this is something I've always moaned about. Of course, that it just completely ruins the moment. But I have to say, for the first time, I think ever since it's been implemented, and you could maybe look at Iheanacho's winner for Leicester against Everton, maybe as being another example when he scored right at the death. But it did feel like the celebrations were similar or even the same to what they would have been had it just been a goal that was given without VAR from Bournemouth.
When it was VAR offside, I think Dan Gosling headed hands, I was offside, and then suddenly it was like, oh, OK, they're checking this. So there was that kind of natural reaction to celebrating a goal because he was very clearly, oh, it's offside. It's, oh, VAR, well, let's see what happens.
I don't know. I mean,
on TV, he's like head in his hands, he's like, oh, it's offside, OK, really? Fair enough. Okay. It's, you know, I actually forced myself to watch Match of the Day when I got in, so I want to see what it was all about. And he just kind of thought, oh, it's offside. Then it's like, okay, they go back for what's going to be a free kick to Chelsea, and then, oh, it's a goal. And then it's like, okay, there's 5 minutes to go, we get a win at Chelsea. Then, you know, fantastic celebrations. You know, it's, I mean, for me, I just listen, VAR could be an entire show debating, you know, the good and the bad of it, but I just think it just kills the game personally.
Yeah,
but it was the right decision.
Yeah, it was the right decision.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's where I've said it before. It can work that way, but again, it should have been a far quicker than what it actually was. Go on.
I said it was clear and obvious. It should be done in 10 seconds, not in 2 minutes.
It was clearly onside. It shouldn't have taken so long, but it did, and that is just unfortunately the way football is now. With regards to Frank Lampard and his reactions, I suppose, and we spoke about this last week as well, gents, in the sense that he's like, no, it doesn't surprise me. It's not a reality check for me because I expected this. I said when we went on this long run, it wasn't okay, and he's kind of now proving his point a little bit, isn't he?
He's always been very adamant that in about where we are, and that, in fact, we've had seven wins, fantastic, but that's, you know, maybe it flattered to deceive a little bit because we weren't, apart from Wolves, I don't think we're really putting teams to the sword. We just, you know, scraping wins, and I think he's always said we're a work in progress, you know, we're doing brilliantly well, we're ahead of the curve, and this is a reality check. We're still a long way from the finished article. Frank I think knows that, and I believe he's instilling that into the team. He's I said last week, I think he's very much like, you know, he's got a, you know, iron fist and a velvet glove. He talks so well post-match interviews, you know, he very articulate.
Very honest, isn't he, actually?
Yeah, he's very honest. He's won it all. He knows about it. He's played in some phenomenal teams throughout his career, so he knows what we need to do to win. And we're a long way from that line, I think. Yeah. You know,
I mean,
despite seven wins.
I mean, you could say that we've been a long way from where we used to be in terms of some of the great teams that we've had. But being Chelsea, we cover it up by winning stuff still because we've just had this unbelievable ability to win trophies. And also, as I said, we've had players like Hazard who, you know, they're rare. When you get a player who can turn a game on his own, rescue, you know, when you're in a tricky game where it's going to be 0-0, can come up with that goal. They're rare, and we've had a player like him for quite a while.
That's,
so I think
7 years.
He's probably papered over some of the cracks too. But yeah, I think you're right. I think Frank can look at that team and say that this is nothing like, say, the team that I had anywhere between you know, 2004 and 2012, really.
I mean, if we gave the Champions League, I mean, that was a, you know, it wasn't...
Arguably the worst team we had in the competition up till then.
You know, the Napoli game, you know, Ashley Cole clears the ball for Lionel Naples and that just gives us that chance. And then, you know, Benfica were hanging on for dear life. So, you know, we haven't really... I mean, I think the whole... I think Abramovich, you know, changed a little bit, trying to stick to FFP, and suddenly, you know, from being the team that goes out and spends, you know, buys Sean Mike Phillips so Arsenal can't get him, that those days have gone. And I think we've been, you know, taken over by, you know, City, for example, who now have got what I believe is a really phenomenal structure in place from top to bottom. We should have done that. We were the first team with a serious oligarch spending money, and we didn't, it was hit, not hit and miss, but we didn't really kind of, no forward planning, you know, John Terry was coming at the end. Did we bring in like a Vinny company or did we bring in Virgil van Dijk to replace him? There hasn't been any serious planning for replacing that incredible spine like Peter Cech, Ashley Cole. No. We've not replaced Ashley Cole, left back, since he's gone. You know, JT, okay, JT's, you know, he's an anomaly because someone like him is a once-in-a-lifetime sort of player. But we could have bought van Dijk 3 years ago. He was a star player then.
Yeah, but that wasn't their business model. I think two things happened. I mean, we know about this. Yeah. You know, on the one hand, you know, when AVB came in, we started buying very different kinds of players. Mm. There was the whole hoo-ha about getting some of the old legends out who were deemed to have too much power. We started getting these smaller kind of tiki-taka type players, Barcelona light style. Yeah. And at the same time, you know, the club went onto a footing of trying to break even and not basically as a certain politician might say, spaffing it all up the wall.
You look at the players like Mixon, Mata, Oscar, and Hazard, and you kind of think, well, that's three Pep Guardiola players. Yeah. I think Roman put all his eggs in the Pep basket. I think because we're a basket case for a club, I don't think Pep fancied it, and he went to Munich.
I mean, what interests me, you know, talking about this kind of in the wider context, you know, we always look at the team that Mourinho built, and of course, you know, the core of that were the legendary players of Cech, Ashley Cole, John Terry, Frank Lampard, Didier Drogba, et cetera, are such a great team. Mm. And yet, that team that won the title with Conte, I mean, that was phenomenal what they did.
That turnaround.
Conte, well, consider how poorly they started, but in terms of where they finished up at the end of the season, how dominant that team was, I mean, that was frightening. And yet I wouldn't sit there and say, well, that's a great Chelsea team.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Marcus Alonso, Bolton, Sunderland reject. Yeah. Essentially.
I think even when you go back as far as Ancelotti, to an extent, his last title that he won at Chelsea, it's almost like he eked out the last dredges of that side.
We had like Anelka, Malouda. I mean, he got the Anelka, Malouda, Drogba playing phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, we were scoring sevens and eights so frequently. And that was probably the last dominant team we had. Because I think we put United away 2-1 and that kind of gave us the league.
But I mean, the last hurrah for the great team that Mourinho built was the Champions League final.
Yeah, and then maybe like the afterthought was the Europa League the following season.
But that was
Di Matteo. They didn't want to give Di Matteo the job, but they had to because of Champions League, and he was found out fairly quickly by sort of November time. We got beat by Juventus.
It does tickle me pink as I was thinking about this, because I'm gonna be popping out a you know, Chelsea decade article coming soon, folks, to a football.london near you. But it really amuses me that Chelsea won the Champions League and then later on in the decade won two further European trophies, but with the two most loathed managers in their history.
Yeah.
only Chelsea can do this.
I mean, it's mad, it's crazy times.
Only Chelsea, absolutely, gents. And speaking of the Champions League, of course, the draw has been made. It is Bayern Munich. We'll be speaking all about that after this on the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport. Love Sport. It's a Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with Stanford Chidge and Dan Silver of the Chelsea Fancast. Gents, we were speaking about Champions League before the ads. Bayern Munich are the team, and we hark back to 7 years prior and the wonderful memories of the Allianz, of course, beating them on their own patch. Is it going to be the same again, Dan?
No.
Two legs this time.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's going to be a really tough... I mean, because we came second, we knew we were going to get a really tough game. I mean, even if we got Leipzig, that'd still be a tough one. I mean, but then...
Leipzig are top of the Bundesliga.
Yeah, they're a good side.
Good luck without Spurs.
Yeah. Listen, who knows? I mean, this is Chelsea. It's glorious unpredictability, to quote Mr. Worrell. You never know what you're going to get. I mean...
It's quite Forrest Gump as well.
Yeah.
Life's like a box of chocolates.
Yeah, stupid is as stupid does.
That's right.
Yeah. It's going to be a really, really tough
game. I am not a smart man, but I know about Chelsea. Something like that.
Yeah. It's going to be a really tough game. It's going to be good for the youth to kind of, you know, cut the mustard against, you know, some of the best players in the world. And we've got Lewandowski, who's got
You sound a bit defeatist here, Dan.
He does, doesn't he?
Come on, liven
up, mate.
What's wrong with you? Why are you suddenly thinking that it's a foregone conclusion that Bayern are going to win this game?
I didn't say that. I said, listen, Spurs...
Just because Jonathan's not here, you don't have to adopt his position, mate.
Yeah, you know what? I think we're going to do him. I mean, in fairness, you know, as long as we do better than Spurs, losing 7-2 at home, I'll be happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we might get a positive result at home. I think we might get like a 2-1.
I think it's too early to tell. I think the trouble with... I mean, when the draw came out, I was genuinely really pumped for it, actually. Yeah. You know, we have an interesting rivalry with Bayern Munich, not least because of the Champions League in 2012. Frank Lampard, arguably his greatest ever moment in his Chelsea career. Well, his goal.
Yeah, against Oliver Kahn.
God, I was there.
Wow, what a game.
I was there for that.
4-1, and Ballack died for a penalty.
Yeah, yeah. Darren Mantle's never forgiven him for that, even when he joined us.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, Frank was captain that night in the Allianz in 2012. It just seemed like serendipity. And I actually thought, you know, considering who we could have got, PSG, I've had enough of playing PSG.
Mm-hmm.
We could have got Barcelona. No, not again. They've got our number at the moment. And we used to have a really good record against them hitherto. Juventus, you know, that would have been a nightmare with Sarri. We all know what would have happened there. So I actually think that all things considered, that we were going to get a tough draw. Bayern Munich, who are something like fifth in the Bundesliga at the moment, got a manager called Herr Flick. It couldn't be better, could it? Hansi Flick, who may or may not even be there. And that's my point. It's too early for us to even begin to think about it, because this match isn't going to be played until February the 25th and March the 18th. And a lot might happen before then. Our form might have absolutely bombed, or it might have got better. We might have signed some new players that will strengthen the side. Bayern Munich's form might have got better. Who knows? There's a couple of months away yet. So a lot of water has to go under the bridge until then. But I'm okay with it. You're going to play a good side.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're going to win it. You've got to play good sides. Be great for the kids to learn.
I've got to ask you as well, Chidge. Now, you often speak about the 2008 Champions League final and the fact that you weren't able to watch it because you were helping a comedian.
I was
at the
filming
time.
A concert with Ricky Tomlinson, who you would have thought, as a Liverpool fan, would have been somewhat sympathetic to my cause. Was he hell?
Really?
A miserable, cantankerous old you-know-what.
Brookside reject.
Blimey. It was awful. I've still not seen the whole match.
Have you not?
Nope. No. I was devastated.
See, I've got a thing about this, and I understand your reasoning. Now, with regards to not watching the whole match, I'm a true believer, a firm believer, that you need to watch the defeats, the terrible times, in order to justify the good times.
We had
by doing that, you then help the good times come.
We had years of doing that live. We don't need to watch the Champions League final, to be sure.
Exactly.
We get beat by Scunthorpe and Scarborough and Oxford and teams like that, so I don't need to go and watch a Champions League final that had Drogba not hit the post or got sent off. We might have won. It was horrible. I mean... You know,
fair enough.
Yeah.
No, I understand. But what I was going to get to was your memories. Because while we're talking about it, it's nice to bring a bit of positivity. It's Christmas after all.
Yeah, yeah.
2012, your memories, gents. Did you watch all of that one, Chidge?
I was there.
Watch all of what one? 2012? I was there, mate.
There you go. Yeah.
I remember the day so clearly. And I think my first day back at work on the Monday, I think I told the story to about 16 different people. And they were like, oh, not this story again. We know you went here. We know you did that. We know there was a random Bayern Munich fan who asked you for a photo in the toilet. And just, it was the most incredible
story I've not heard before.
No,
so basically, right, we went
is this safe from being on air?
Completely clean. We went to the Olympic Park. The old Munich Stadium, where they had like a fan stadium.
You went to the wrong place, Dan. The final was at the Allianz, mate.
So we were there. We like.
What were you watching?
We had a few beers, and there was a Bayern Munich legends against Chelsea legends, and I obviously a few beers and Steins. I had to go to the toilet, so I went in there, and you know, as anyone then in walks a Bayern Munich fan with the full like Lederhosen whole lot.
A lot of them were with Lederhosen on, weren't they?
The baby goes, oh, Chelsea, like
who Chelsea,
yeah,
London.
Can I have a photo? I was like, or can I just, like, you know, I'll meet at the top of the stairs. So anyway, took a photo. He goes, let me have your email. I send you a photo. And I was okay. So I've got an email address.
This isn't the toilet, was it?
No, this is the top of the toilet. Okay. So I've got an email address I use for ordering stuff online. And so I gave him that one.
Gave him Jonathan's.
Yeah, I didn't know him at the time. So anyway, to cut a long story short, about Monday, about 11 o'clock, I got a beep on my phone. and it was from some random address, and he was like, "Hello, Chelsea. Here's a photo of you and me. Well done for Champions League."
Wow.
Fair play, though. Yeah. Fair play to that lad. Well done for the Champions League.
Yeah, I said thank you. It was the most incredible. I mean, arguably, aside from my wedding, in case she's listening, it was
the second greatest day of your life.
Yeah.
Like it was for me, Dan.
I started my wedding speech as saying, to be honest, I've not been this nervous since Drogba stepped up in Munich. And there was about half the audience that laughed that got football, and half the guests were like, "What? What's he talking about?"
Did you say that in your wedding speech?
First,
did
like,
you?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. Chidge?
Well, I think, you know, it's a good job we didn't say I haven't been this nervous since Mata went up and took the...
I said to him, he's going to miss, because he missed, like, Birmingham in the Cup, and he missed
it.
I said to my friend...
It was Louise was the one that
he's going to miss this.
Was just brilliant the way he ran up. Well, yeah, I mean, just remarkable day. I mean, talk about the Bayern fans, actually. I mean, there was obviously so many of them there. What I didn't realise, although I feel I perhaps should have done, but they're quite derided in Germany. They're like the Man United of Germany. In other words, they have a lot of fans from all over Germany and all over the world. And I don't think that goes down particularly well. They thought they'd won it. I mean, I was there early in the morning, and in the Munich, what's the big central?
Ostplatz and
You know, they were so confident. And that's why they were full of bonhomie and being really lovely and friendly to us. And, you know, because I think they were just so confident they were going to win. And then there was that Unsere Pokal, Unsere Stadt.
Our stadium, our cup,
And I think, the minute I saw that, I thought, yeah, Schadenfreude is one of my favourite words. How appropriate that I'm going to see it in Germany. Yeah.
I mean, I saw Alex Stewart on the way out of the game, and I was like, "Oh, Alex, is it better than the Ashes?" And he went, "Yeah, much better than the Ashes."
Brilliant. I never
really
knew that.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I spoke to Darren Barker, actually.
Oh, really?
The middleweight
Darren's
boxer.
A good lad.
Yeah, a year or so after that, as he was bidding for World Championship glory, of course. Daniel Gill, he'd be, I think, maybe 2012, 2013, around that time. And he's got some great stories of that night, to be fair, in the hotel pool or whatever was, speaking with the guy. Because they just stayed up all night, didn't they, the players? Didn't go to bed.
I mean, then I got home at like 6 in the morning, and then she goes, "Oh, do you want to go to the parade?" I'm like, "Yeah." Went to the parade, and then I think like 8 o'clock on Sunday night, not slept since Friday morning. I was like, that was it. I just like fell asleep. Yeah.
I got on the Guinness the minute I got to the pub at 7 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning.
The actual Guinness or the clear Guinness?
This was the actual Guinness.
Yeah. It was just like one of those days. It's like I can close my eyes and remember every second of, you know, getting to Gatwick at 3 in the morning, the coach, get the ticket, the game, my phone dying at like 8 o'clock because obviously I didn't have a charger, and it's, you know, my particular phone has got a really useless battery life, and then getting home, plugging my phone in, my phone exploding with text messages. And but I think also the highlight was knocking Tottenham out of the Champions League.
I never forget. I mean, when, you know, obviously you wanted, I mean, I had a flight to catch back that night because I could only get in and out on the day.
Same here.
So I was really annoyed that I had to go, because you just wanted to soak it up for as long as you could. And obviously a whole load of songs were kicking off, but actually within about 2 minutes of us, you know, lifting the trophy, players all celebrating, "Are you watching Tottenham?" sparked up from the whole of the Chelsea end. And I thought that was class.
Brilliant, yeah.
That's how it should be.
I mean, my kind of thing is, because we got to like 89th minute before Drogba scored, and we were literally one of the first flights out of Munich. I said, "Listen, let's say for this corner, if nothing happens, let's go, because I don't want to be here at full time." And then corner comes in, Drogba scores. The rest is history.
The rest is absolute history. Yeah. And you mentioned the youth team, guys, and the fact that the youth will learn from this. One of those players, well, not really, to be fair, 23 years old now, but this game, like you said, Chidge, 25th of February, a player who may well be back if we're to read a lot into certain social media posts this week, Mr. Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
Yeah, I mean, there was some talk that it was more like March. I think Chidge and I went to a Paul Canneville event.
We did, didn't we?
A couple of weeks ago, one of the, Eddie Newton was there, one of the people there pulled him to one side. Apparently, so has it, he's not going to be back until March, but he's back out kicking the ball, which is encouraging.
He's definitely training on his own. He's doing, you know, fitness work with the ball. I'm very worried about Loftus-Cheek. That is a horrible injury to get for anybody, but he is a unit. So, you know, I think it's difficult because he's a heavy guy, you know, he's a big guy.
He's literally like the proverbial outhouse, isn't he? I mean,
yeah,
he's huge.
And you know, I think there's also a psychological element to injuries like that when you basically get injured without any physical contact, because there's always that doubt in your mind, can it happen again? I will be amazed if we really see anything out of Loftus-Cheek this year. Yeah, I mean, I think he might come back, but
he won't be.
What I hope is that it's a bit like we've seen with Hudson-Odoi, really. You know, don't put too much pressure on him, because that's a really horrible... when I was young, you know, you would, that was it. That was a career-ending injury. You know, you did your Achilles like that and you were out. You'd play again. You know, so it's only really recently that you can recover from it. But, you know, it's a long, long road back for him. And I just hope that the club and particularly the supporters don't put too much pressure on him, because he's a rare talent, but it could take him a long time to get back to where he was. And I think you can say the same about Hudson-Odoi, actually, because if you look at his form, everybody's going around saying, "Oh, why is he playing like this?" I mean, even Mortz, when I talked to him on last Sunday, saying, "Yeah, but he's kind of lost his touch. He's giving the ball away. He's doing bad passes." I think it's mental.
I agree with you.
And physical, it's mental.
Yeah, and I think he's seen as well what's happened while he's been away. Yeah. And he's going...
Trying too hard.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Snatching at chances, trying to whip crosses in.
Pulisic has come in and done really, really well.
Yeah.
And then obviously Williams, the experience amongst a lot of them.
Apart from on corners, mate.
Yeah. You know why when he puts his hand in the air with like one finger, he's not going to beat the first man.
Yeah.
That's who he's aiming for.
Yeah.
Well, of course, it is Spurs this weekend as well, gents. This is the Chelsea Fan Show. By the way, a quick stat before we go to the ads, that Chelsea could be the first Premier League team to beat a fellow Premier League team away from home at three different grounds this weekend. Of course, White Hart Lane and Wembley. Will it be the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium this Sunday? It's the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
It's the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from the Chelsea Fancast, Dan Silver and Stamford Chidge. Now, Chelsea travel to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Sunday for a 4:30 p.m. kickoff. We're going to speak to Dan Tracy of the eSpurs podcast in a moment, but we finished the last section with a stat. And Chidge, we're going to start this one with a stat as well.
We are. This is courtesy of our good mate, actually, Rick Glanville, who's Chelsea's official historian. A really lovely, lovely chap. And I think he's been on the show, actually, possibly. But anyway, he does the pre-match briefing on the club website, and he's come up with this one, that apparently Chelsea are unbeaten on new grounds for the last 18 years, going back to 2001, starting with St Mary's. I won't read the whole list out because they are many. But what an interesting record that is, that we haven't been beaten and playing in a new ground for us.
For the first time in the Premier League. Yeah.
Which, of course, the Tottenham Hotspur American Football Stadium?
Something like that,
The new White Hart Lane. Yeah.
The Nike Stadium.
Whatever.
Various different names, isn't it? And, of course, someone to tell us about that now is Dan Tracy from the eSpurs podcast. How are you doing, Dan?
Not too bad, thank you. Good evening.
Good evening,
good evening,
boss.
Dan.
Great
evening
to have you on the line. Thanks for coming on Friday. Now, we've done a few stats already, and another one I'm going to throw at you is that Jose Mourinho, in 13 games against sides he's previously managed, has never lost. Is that record going to be broken on Sunday?
Chelsea beat
United 4-0. He lost to Man United the other week.
We beat Man United 4-0.
Home fixture. At home. I did say that, didn't I?
No.
I'm kidding. Yes, at home. He's never lost a home fixture.
That's a good stat. It does make me worried slightly, because I guess all stats, you know, all records have to be broken at some point. But at the same time, Chelsea aren't in the best form. So it's going to be certainly interesting on Sunday, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you beat us after like 28 years of Stamford Bridge. So those records there to be broken, didn't you? A couple of years ago under Conte.
And we're also the great run enders, aren't we, at the moment? Everybody who's on a really poor run of form seems to win against us at the moment. I'll tell you what, Dan, I'll be honest with you, mate. You know, Mourinho's done all right. Matt off air was disagreeing vehemently, but he's done all right with you lot since he's turned up. I'll give him that. And you know, he's still a very, very good manager. And I am worried about Sunday. I really am. But we are a much better side away from home than we are at home. And the way he's got Tottenham playing, which is very un-Mourinho-like, he's kind of retained your best attacking instincts. But you're about as leaky as we are at the back. So I think we will get space to counter-attack you. And that kind of fills me with a bit of hope.
Yes, I was going to say that the fact that you're better away from home than at Stamford Bridge. So I think the fact that you've lost 4 out of 5, some Tottenham fans are thinking, oh, brilliant, Chelsea are there for the taking. But as you say, away from Stamford Bridge seems to be better. So it's no foregone conclusion by any stretch of the imagination. There's certainly going to be goals because of Tottenham's defence. Like I say, they're not creating that fortress that they had in, say, the last season of White Hart Lane. You know, you look at the kind of personnel that we've got, there's still always a risk in Serge Aurier, left-back, if you've got the Tongan playing left-back. He's very good defensively, but he can get exposed when pace is coming at him. So, you know, you look at, like, Adama Traore last week, there could be scope for Chelsea to replicate something like that. So, yeah, I think there's certainly going to be opportunities for Chelsea, but whether they take them is going to be a different
matter.
Well,
that's a good point, because we haven't been recently, and that's been a massive, massive problem. But there you go. Look, how do you feel about being about having Jose in charge? I mean, you know, I remember the number of times he used to coat you off when he was a Chelsea manager. Mm. How do you, have you had a bit of a Damasian conversion to Jose, having probably hated him for years, or what?
Oh yeah, I mean, there's no secret that Spurs fans didn't like Mourinho when he was managing Chelsea or, you know, any other club. You know, it's just that he was that kind of person. But I think he seems to be a bit more humble at the moment, and I think there is that. Sort of
It'll never last.
That,
it won't last.
No, no, I think there's also that as well, that if you appoint Mourinho, you take it at your own risk, because you look at his previous boom and bust cycle, that this is the honeymoon period. There's no doubt about that. And even if we go on and, say, win the FA Cup, it's going to be all great. But there's always that danger in the back of your mind that, you know, three seasons from now, two seasons from now, it's going to end in some acrimony. But I think, you know, there are still people have been, not necessarily sort of pro-Poch, but they're still sort of clinging on to that fact that he shouldn't have been sacked. He should have been given all season and all this kind of stuff. But you can't really argue fundamentally what has happened in the last sort of few weeks. The fact that, you know, part of that is played into the fact that you've lost games. But from going from 12 points when Mourinho took over to now 3 points behind, people are starting to sort of warm to the sort of, actually, hey, do you know what? This isn't as bad as we first thought.
Mm. I mean, do you think that was going to happen? Poch just had kind of ran out of ideas, or was it always a case that, you know, Spurs were just unlucky before Poch was sacked? Because it came out of nowhere. I mean, when I heard it, I was like, oh, wow, I wasn't expecting that, because I know you've been off form. Were you just unlucky from the start of the season, or was there just a real kind of, Poch has been there, done that, and players are bored with his, you know, his talk and his coaching?
Yeah, I think it's the latter, to be honest. I mean, in this day and age, what, 5 and a bit years is a great length of service. Like, you're never going to get a Ferguson or a Wenger type of legend anymore. So to get that kind of run is quite, you know, a success in itself. I think the thing that was Poch's ultimate undoing was before the Champions League final, he said, if I win this, I'm off.
Yeah.
And when you say that to a dressing room, it's like, well, hang on, like, you know, you've sort of already checked out. Why are we going to run through brick walls for you? So I think just...
Really dumb just thing to say, yeah. Dan. I mean, I can't understand why he did that. I really can't.
It was basically the millstone around his neck for the start of this season, really. And when you've got players, not necessarily down in tools, but you can tell there's just a sort of a general malaise, a fatigue around the club. And you just think, it's not even down to sort of luck, really. A lot of the tactical sort of changes, and you've sort of got a different formation each week. And that's almost a sign of desperation when a manager's sort of chopping and changing every week and just chucking anything at the wall and hoping it sticks. I just think it did just come to the end of its sort of natural cycle, really. Unfortunate, but I think that's just what it is.
I mean, do you think Daniel Levy's going to back Mourinho? Because obviously there was a lot of talk that he, you know, the two transfer windows aren't signing anybody. Do you think there's going to be money to spend? Do you think he'll give Jose, you know, investment in the squad?
I think he will. I think whether it's January might be too early, because there's never really perceived value in the January market. It's more for sort of desperation rather than desire. I think, you know, like, do Tottenham really need lots of new names right now? Probably not. So I think the money is certainly there to be spent, but I just don't necessarily feel that it's going to be a case of, you know, a big, massive war chest at the turn of the year. I think it's more about, you know, see what you can do this season, and then we'll sort of look in the summer and actually try and then build from there.
Yeah, because I guess for Tonga, I'd very well sign a new contract, hasn't he, this week? And then I guess it's trying to get Eriksen to stay is the next big target, isn't it?
It is, but I think him personally, I think he looks like he's mentally checked out. You sort of, you hear the...
Yeah, do you want him to stay, Dan? Or are you happy to see him go now?
On the basis of performances this season, I'd probably just call it a day, to be honest. I mean, admittedly, that comes with he hasn't done much because he hasn't had many minutes, but the way Tottenham are playing with their attacking four, you do need to ask yourself, well, where does he fit into that as well? So you never really want to see a player leave for free, but I think it's probably sort of best, maybe if we could tell him in January to get some money. You know, Levy's not a bad businessman by any stretch of the imagination. So if you ask me, you know, which would I rather keep out of Vertonghen or Eriksen, I'd be asking for Vertonghen right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a massive fan of Son. I just think he's just an incredible player. I love him at Chelsea. I think everything about him is as a character, as a person, as a player, I think he's just absolutely brilliant. I mean, is he very popular with the Spurs lot?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't sort of fault the guy. I mean, is just he comes across as a generally nice bloke, and he just his talents. You know, people say he's underrated, but I think he's sort of he's where he is at the moment. I don't think he's quite sort of that top caliber of like world beater, but I think he's very, very good, and I think he's almost the sort of the unsung hero. You'll slightly pardon the pun. What Tottenham do?
Yeah, no, I think he's outstanding. I think he and Kane. I just think he just as a kind of partnership are just so dangerous. We've got to really be careful of those two because you know Kane can create a goal out of anything.
So Dan, look back to Mourinho. Is there a sense for you that you know you're prepared to put up with what might happen, i.e., it all ending in tears with palpable discord, because what he might do for you is in a sense what he did for Chelsea back in 2004, which is to get Chelsea over the line and instill a winning mentality, which, you know, a trophy-winning mentality, if you like, which, with due respect, you know, that's what Tottenham have been missing, certainly for the last 10 years. Is that what your hope is, that he can get in there, change the mentality, win you something, and then off you go, and then he can disappear back to probably Real Madrid or whoever else is on the list next?
Yeah, for me personally, and I think for a lot of people, it's a case of Tottenham were perceived as a good club. Not everyone's sort of favourite neutral sort of club, but you know, someone who's easy on the eye, they play good football. But over that span of Pochettino, we didn't win anything. So now it's a case of, if you can get Mourinho in, and he actually wins you a trophy, you might start, you know, performing the dark arts and be a bit more nasty. You might not be as likeable as what you were a few seasons back. But if that actually gets you over the line, and like you say, creates and installs that winning mentality, then surely the ends have to justify the means. So for me personally, I think, yeah, that's the sort of the right direction we need to go in.
Yeah, you'd rather win trophies than be liked, wouldn't you?
What's that?
You'd rather win trophies than be liked.
Hell yeah.
Well, you would. I think you would, to be honest. I think, you know, you look at like the great Holland team from 1970 and 74 and all that, and you think, well, you know, they argue about they could be the world's best ever team, but they didn't win the World Cup, did they? So you don't ever want to be the nearly men. You don't want to look back in history. And no one's going to remember, really, the FA Cup or the Champions League runners-up in 10 years' time. You don't. You just look about who won what. So I think Tottenham need to be part of that conversation, not just be a team that played nice football.
So what do you want, ideally, Dan, trophy-wise? League Cup or an FA Cup's not going to cut it, surely?
Well, we're not in the League Cup because we got dumped out by Colchester. So, yeah. I think this season, I think an FA Cup looks the most viable option. I think when Mourinho took over, I think everyone was putting their eggs in the FA Cup basket and thinking, if we can just get that, that would be great. But now the sort of top four landscape has changed. I wouldn't say dramatically, but it's obviously, it's a race now. And I think, you know, it's not necessarily a case of either or. If we can win on Sunday, then you are sort of in pole position. So you think, you know, why not top four again? And people will argue, you know, top four is a trophy in itself. But I think Tottenham are just desperate to win something. You know, 11 years for a club of this perceived stature is too long. So I think an FA Cup wouldn't necessarily paper over the cracks or anything like that, but it would be a great way to end this rather tumultuous season.
I guess that winning mentality, which Jose did when he won the League Cup with us in February, that gives all those players mentality of winning a trophy and then kick on from there.
Indeed. Dan, you mentioned there whether you're going to win on Sunday. Are you going to win on Sunday? Just 3 points separating the sides now in the Premier League. So how big is this game? Can you win it?
I think we can, yeah. I think, to be honest, to Chelsea, it's more a do not lose than a must win. For us, I think it is a must win. We need to sort of really put our stake in the ground. So I think we're going to edge it 2-1, to be honest.
Dan, great having you on, boss. Yeah, thanks
cheers,
for coming
mate.
On tonight.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Good luck.
Not a problem. Cheers, guys.
Thanks.
Dan Tracy of the eSpurs podcast there. A must not lose for Chelsea. We are going to be discussing that and everything point. Else that yeah. Dan said there, here on the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport. Love Sport. It is the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the guys on the Chelsea Fancast, Stanford Chidge and Dan Silver. We just spoke to Dan Tracy there from the eSpurs podcast. Now, gents, he said this was a must-not-lose game for Chelsea on Sunday. It is, by the way, the first time the club could lose three consecutive Premier League games for the first time since Mourinho's last ill-fated end of era back in 2015. Is this a must-not-lose for Chelsea?
I think everything about it is a must not lose, you know, just from terms of where we are in the league, from a fan perspective as well, because there's a real rivalry with Spurs. I think it is a game a draw would be, I think everyone would be happy with a draw, to be honest. I just think if we lose, then Spurs have the momentum with a much more experienced manager. A manager's won stuff. It does kind of, put us, behind the line, as it were.
Well, that's the trouble, Dan. When everything's with him and the players are with him particularly, then Mourinho's still a very good manager. I do still wonder whether he's become a bit of an anachronism, that he hasn't moved with the times. And I think this is ultimately why it all ends in tears, because the environment gets toxic, because the players won't put up with him for more than a year or two. But in that year or two, he is still a very capable manager, not least because he's a great tactician. He's got great in-game management, and he always has done. It's perhaps the people management around that can be questioned. Is it a must-lose game? I mean, that's a good question. Every year I've ever been supporting Chelsea, I would have absolutely wouldn't have even hesitated to say, of course, it's a must win game, let alone a must not lose game, because it's Tottenham. You know, it's our biggest rivalry. It's the match we have to. I mean, you remember Bournemouth when we were all at Bournemouth, and we were absolutely dogs at that time, weren't we? And we all started singing, "Don't lose to Tottenham, you better." Well, we can't actually repeat it, but the inference was, "You better not lose to Tottenham."
Last 10 minutes of the game, I think it was under, and then
so it's serious.
The Leicester year, wasn't it, when Leicester won the league?
But yes, it was.
Yeah,
but this year, it is different. We are so different as a team, as a club, from where we have been before. I think I nearly said this to Dan, actually. It's quite weird, isn't it, when you look at the positions of the teams. In a sense, you would have expected Chelsea to have done more what Tottenham have done, and Tottenham to have been where Chelsea have been in the league this season. It's a bit of a role reversal. So, you know, if you'd have asked me before the season started that Tottenham would be languishing in 14th, with a quarter of the season, and I'd have laughed. I mean, they're in the Champions League final. Mm. They're clearly a decent team. They're an established team. So to see them where they were was a surprise, but it's just too tough to call. I mean, on paper, you'd say Tottenham are the better side. You'd have to. So, you know, you would expect them to win at home.
But then you've got Lampard who gets...
It pains me to say it.
Yeah, but then you've got Frank Lampard who gets what it is to beat Spurs and not
can
to
lose
to Spurs.
Can he get them up for it? That's the thing. Can he come up with a plan... I mean, here's the thing, Dan. Yeah. One thing I was thinking about, you're right, Frank gets it. He knows, and Jody, they know how important it is to us. They know how important... Frank used to tweet out about Tottenham making a DVD if they got to a final and lost.
When they got
he
a point,
knows
when they
what
got a point
it's
against
about.
Chelsea. Yeah.
He knows. Secondly, he worked under Mourinho for 5 seasons. There's nobody in that Premier League, managing the Premier League, who knows how Mourinho ticks better than Frank Lampard. No. Thirdly, he's already got one over him once when he took Derby County up to Old Trafford and beat Mourinho when he was the manager of Man United last year in the Carabao Cup. So he's done it before. He can do it again.
I completely agree in terms of... And you think about whether this is the right fixture or the wrong fixture. Would it have been better to have had a Southampton, who, of course, you've got next? Would that have been better to have been in this fixture? But I don't think it is. I think it's the perfect fixture.
It'd be a tonic.
It's a big team, big reaction needed.
Played well against City.
Yeah.
They played well against Liverpool.
Yeah,
they were unlucky to lose.
Twice against Liverpool.
You know, maybe... I think, actually, do you know what? I think maybe this is where the older, more established players come to the fore. I think the youngsters whiz around like lunatics being up for it anyway. But I think that it gets the juices going for the older, more experienced players. You know, maybe then, you know, classic, not going to turn up on a really freezing cold day playing against Bournemouth. Mm. But they got a chance to beat... I mean, you know, they all know what it's about to beat. Look at Aspie in the League Cup semi-final last year. How absolutely ballistic he went when we won. They know what it's about. I think they might turn up, actually, on Sunday. Got a good feeling.
Let's hope they do. Well, gents, this is the last Chelsea fan show before we get to the new year. So let's just have a little look and reflect on the past 12 months and look ahead to the games before the new year as well. Like I said, it is Southampton, it's Arsenal, a feisty, festive fixture. That's going to be on the 29th of December, of course. And Arsenal now managed by Mikel Arteta.
Is Arteta going to turn up for that?
Is he going to turn up?
So he's decided not to bother against his former side.
Interesting, huh? And then, of course, Brighton on New Year's Day. But let's reflect, gents, on the past year at Chelsea. It started with Sarri, it ended with Lamps. How's it been for you, Dan?
We won a trophy, we came third. We got rid of arguably one of the most unpopular managers in recent years and brought in a Chelsea legend. So listen, it's, you know, if you tell me every year we're going to win a trophy, I'd be happy. I mean, you know, we smashed Arsenal, came third, put, you know, above Spurs, our worst ever season in 4 years, and we still win a trophy. Yeah. It's Chelsea, you know, I've been through so much.
Roller coaster, mate, isn't it?
So much rubbish. When you get to fourth round of the FA Cup, you're delighted, you know. That was an achievement 25 years ago.
Yeah, but, you know, and I agree with you, as you know, but, I think it's right to respect the views of both the older ones and the younger ones, who will retort and say, "Yes, but we are not that club anymore, Dan."
But
so you can't languish in that sentiment, because you know we expect more.
We expect more, but then you think, well, you know, that's still part of our history. You know,
I agree. Look, you know me; I'm old school. I go to the football for a good day out with my mates in the expectation that it'll be ruined by 98 minutes of football. Still, and you won't ever change that. But you know, like everybody, I get that. I mean, I was really, really fed up after losing to Bournemouth the other week, because it was it was just an inept display in a sense. It was really, what was interesting was how angry Frank was after that match as well. And I do wonder, in a sense, whether this could be a mixed blessing, that on the one hand, he's very much a Chelsea fan. I think emotionally he's in the same place as we are. And that can be good, because he gets it. But I also wonder if it means he doesn't have enough distance from it when it goes a bit pear-shaped.
Sort of his judgment a little bit.
I mean, he keeps saying this. He keeps saying, well, you know, everybody's been going on about how brilliant we are, but I've been saying, no. You know, it'd be interesting to see that. One thing I want to say, Matt, before we go, is, you know, thank everybody for listening this year, and hope they all have a very happy Christmas and New Year, because we won't get the opportunity to do that before Christmas. So we can get that in first.
Before it's too late. Gigi. Because actually, not only is it the end of the year, gents, it's the end of a decade.
It is, isn't it?
If we're going to say where we started, it was with the double, in 2010.
Ten trophies.
Double. Yeah. John Terry has won the double. From the lane of one again.
Yeah, I mean,
three
European trophies in that time.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? We are officially, and this is a fact, this is a Rafa fact and a Chidge fact.
Fact.
Chelsea are the team of the decade. We have won more trophies than any other team this decade, mate.
Is that right?
It's a fact.
Yeah.
Wow.
And arguably, I mean, if you did a kind of one of those little bar charts or one of those, you know, graph things, if we've been up and down like a yo-yo league position-wise, and we've still won more trophies than any other English side in the competitions this decade.
We've had as many managers as trophies.
We've had more managers than anybody else. Yeah. We've had more absolute combustions than anybody else. This, my friend, is what Sporting Chelsea is all about and always has been. We're mad. Absolutely bonkers as a club.
Good friend Marco were a glorious unpredictability.
Glorious unpredictability. Well, Marco, Matt knows well. Yeah exactly. Yeah.
No, it's been great. I mean, you know, ten trophies. It's been a roller coaster.
Three
of
European
fun.
Trophies in a decade, mate. That's nuts, isn't it? Think about it. Two of them were managers we hated.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, that's the crazy thing,
three
isn't it?
Titles.
Because you talk about, I mean, I imagine the clincher. Was the clincher the most recent Europa League in terms of the most amount of trophies won by Maurizio Sarri?
Weirdly, I did this thing on Twitter about who, you know, after who was more popular, Rafa or Sarri, and Sarri won, which
did
I was
he?
Very surprised about. Yeah, it was quite close. It was like Brexit close, but Sarri was the most unpopular manager.
Was there? Really? Could you abstain from that vote?
I just put the poll out. I didn't
None of the above.
Yeah, I put the poll out.
Could you like do what you do in the election, kind of spoil the ballot paper or something?
No, I couldn't. Do that.
I'd have done that.
Twitter talks. I got quite a few votes actually. It was like who was the least popular manager?
Wow.
Well, maybe Rafa's forgotten.
Gents, it's been nothing but a pleasure. Before you go, of course, Spurs, like we said, this Sunday, 4:30. How's it going to end up, Gidge?
There's going to be goals, I think, definitely, because neither team can defend. And because I'm really feeling positive and I can't abide the idea of losing to Tottenham, I'm going to say 3-2 to the Chelsea.
Brilliant. Dan?
2-2 draw.
Yeah.
2-2.
But I would like to see a 6-1 at the lane.
Mate, I'm with you on that. I mean, heart says we're going to win. Yeah. Head says we're going to lose. So it's probably going to be a draw. But I'm still sticking with 3-2.
Lovely stuff. Well, this has been the Chelsea Fan Show, as Stamford Chidge said, for 2019. And Merry Christmas to you all.
Christmas.
Have a great new year. We'll
Thanks
see
for
you
listening.
Next year in 2020.
We will.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.